So today we're going to talk about Memphis, America's cash flow capital. In today's episode, we will discuss Memphis market in 2025, highlighting factors like yields, supply drop, and demand drivers. And we'll look forward to 2026 with projections of where we see Memphis real estate market shifting. Memphis has positioned itself as America's cash flow capital in 2025. And it offers investors a rare blend of affordability, solid yields, and resilient renter demands. But supply is tightening fast, so let's talk today about how your builder relationships allow us to provide continued inventory and where today you believe people should buy. We'll be right back.
Are you thinking about investing in real estate, building your net worth and your income, but you're just not sure where to start? I'm Joe Garner. I'm a mortgage officer and an investor. Let's explore your options on financing your investment property. Connect with me at jogarner.com. Call or text me 901-482-0354. Proud to be a sponsor of It's 5 O'Clock Somewhere Real Estate Podcast.
Welcome back to 5 O'Clock Somewhere Real Estate Investor Podcast. Before we jump into it, I want to introduce Josh Barsh, is still sitting in with us for this next episode. He was here last week. He's been here for like a month. And of course, our producer, Cheese Rolling Capital, our Cheese Rolling Champion of Britain, is sitting in with us today. He's our producer that'll be producing our lovely podcast today. Yeah.
What sad things is Louisiana known for, Josh? Do you know?
Crawfish, badass food, gator hunting.
Read up on that.
It's easy. Listen, crawfish, crabs, not those crabs, the kind you boil, gator hunting. Right. See, how many Brits are gator hunting?
I thought you were going to tell me the best place to find a girlfriend is outside the VD clinic, because you know she's clear.
I am not giving away my secrets. Quit prodding me. Gator hunting? I mean, come on, that's pretty badass. I mean, how many Brits go gator hunting? Zero.
We don't have a whole lot of gators, to be honest.
Well, that's not my problem. You still can't go gator hunt. Nutria. Have you ever hunted nutria? Have you ever seen the movie The Princess Bride?
Of course.
Okay, the giant swamp rats that shoot fire out of their ass? That's what a nutria looks like, except they eat vegetation. They don't really eat
people. I do not think that means what you think it means.
So you have seen the movie. One of my favorite movies, by the way. I got a lot of crap for that.
Quite possibly the best movie ever.
I agree. Totally agree. All right, well, let's get into the topic you wanted to discuss.
Yeah, let me give you some quick facts that I researched today. So in Memphis, the average rent amount is closing in on $1,200 a month.
The market rent, correct?
Market rent, okay. Yeah. So that's right from the bottom all the way to the top. The occupancy rate today is about 87.7%. I say about, and then I state a very specific number. I just realized that.
It's roughly 87.625%.
That's right.
Okay.
Five significant figures. $214,000 is the median sale price as of April, and we've seen since March that creep up by
That's
about
a little higher than
7%.
I
mean, there were several sites that were stating it lower than that, but as I aggregated data from the more reputable sites, ignoring Zillow, because Zillow is notoriously overinflated.
Yep. Except for their rent Zestimates. They are spot on market rents most of the time.
Okay.
So one piece of information that they do get right.
Memphis today is seeing an average yield of 7.8%, which is a lot lower than what we've been experiencing in this group.
You mean as far as return?
Yes.
A cap of 7.8, that's low in my opinion.
That is low.
Well, let me take that back. All right, so let me give you an example. Jeff and I had a conversation with a new investor that called me yesterday or last night. And so obviously we dig into what are your expectations. Are you wanting to find the 1%, 12% gross? You want more than that? You want rehab? You want turnkey? So as we're discussing, we began to realize this guy wants to buy in B-plus neighborhoods and doesn't give a crap about the 12%, right? He's willing to do 7 or 8% to be in a little bit better neighborhood. So, and I imagine there are a number of investors like that, and that may be the reason why that aggregate number is much lower, because most of what we do is going to be in C-plus neighborhoods where you're getting 12, 13, 14% out of the gate.
Well, it's higher appreciation too, right?
I
mean, the nicer the neighborhood, the higher appreciation you're going to have.
Correct.
So, yeah, people.
It's a trade-off.
They're playing the appreciation game instead of the cash flow game.
Right.
So when you interview a new investor, what are the main things that you extol about Memphis?
Well, first I want to derive or decide whether or not they're a 1%er or whether they're a 10% gross or they're, you know, want to be around the eights and sevens. If they tell me I want eight or nine, 10, I'm good. Then that tells me already I'm not going to drive them to a CC plus neighborhood, because I will tell them, well, if we go into CC plus neighborhoods, we can get you 12, 13, 14% new construction, turnkey, whatever you want. And then we start having that conversation about the markets. And through that discussion, I'll determine whether they're a Cordova, Bartlett, Arlington, or Berkeley investor, or whether they're a Fraser, Raleigh, or Whitehaven investor. And this gentleman just so happened to be a Bartlett, Cordova. You know, he'll spend $250,000 for a house that rents for $1,700 a month, because the amount of cash flow is not as important to him as the scale of the tenant, the appreciation of that market. Age of that market is also important. Right, he doesn't want to buy homes built in the 30s.
A lot less headaches, yes. A lot less problems.
Everything's newer, I guess. So through that discussion, I'm going to try to understand what his goals are, understand what his reality is. Then I'm going to ask him the next question: what do you currently have? Where are you currently invested? Where at? What do you have? And through that conversation, I'll be able to zero in on exactly where to look for this guy, his next property, without sending him down a path of, you know, a horror show of stuff he doesn't want to buy, or he doesn't want to, a market he doesn't want to be in.
What would you say about the rapidly shrinking inventory that we have in Memphis?
Amen.
We're seeing it nationwide.
Yeah.
But
amen.
Where do you see inventory coming from over the next year?
Well, I will tell you, last year we were over inventoried because there were so few buyers and so much inventory on the market. After November 6th, that inventory actually started to move. Not at a rapid pace, but a good steady movement. Come end of January, it really took off. So I'm watching the inventory numbers drop daily, like there's a hole in the, you know, in a milk jug, just slowly just going down, which is a good sign for investors that own property that are looking for appreciation. It's a great sign for agents like us that sell investment properties. It's bad for those guys still sitting on their hands saying, well, I'll buy next year, because now next year, that house you could have bought for $150,000 this year is not going to be $170,000 next year, because as the inventory and demand grows, prices are going up again. Now, the biggest problem with that is a lot of times rents don't keep up with that number. Memphis is like a rubber band. Values may jump up from $120,000 to $150,000, but that rent comp is going to stay at $1,250 until a couple of years down the road, it'll snap and catch up with that $1,550 number. So you end up taking shorts on a lot of properties just to get into the game.
One of the stats that I found today showed that new construction is down on last year. So by the end of this year, we're going to see about 35% less.
Yes.
Units coming on.
Well, and the reason behind that was the cost of building. The cost of materials was way up. There weren't enough buyers in the market because of interest rates. So builders realized, I'm not pissing my money away. I'm not going to sit on 10 houses that I can't sell. And they just stopped building. Now, we've got builders, our team's got five builders, and they're building brand new 3.2s and 4.2s all over 38127, 38128, and 38109, which are C plus markets. But before they started building these new homes, they were C-minus markets. And as they're putting up these new construction homes that you could probably buy for $165 to $170, they rent $1,600, $1,700, brand new with a one-year build of warranty. As soon as Terry Brown put a house up, every boarded up house on that street got bought by an investor. Money went into rehab it. Tenant went into place. And the house got flipped and the values went up. So I'll give you a perfect example. 4 years ago, we're selling Terry's houses at $135 a pop. We're selling them at $170 now. That's what they're valued at. And that's all simply because of the growth in the market. So that brings me back to, we have plenty of new construction happening here, but because of the makeup of the citizens or the people inside the city limits that they don't buy, they rent pretty much their entire life, those are being built as rental properties, which has created a whole new kind of avenue for our team, an avenue I really never really wanted to get into. I wasn't interested in new construction. But now I'm seeing the benefit for my investors to have a brand new product, one-year build of warranty, 1% cash flow, in a market that is growing leaps and bounds every single day.
When you've noticed the benefit of working with the MHA, mm-hmm. which is Memphis-based Section 8 program.
Yes. Well, I can tell you, in 2008, 9, and 10, most of the Section 8 investors got out. The reason they got out was because MHA was such a shit show. Did I say shit show?
You said shit show.
Shit show. Okay, it was a shit show. The quicker you take it to the shit show. Shit show starring me. I'll give you an example. An investor, a tenant would break a window. Kid throw a baseball through it or got in a fight with a girlfriend, broke the window. Then next month, MHA wouldn't send the rent check. And the investor would call MHA and say, well, you got a broken window. You got to fix it or we're not going to pay you. And he'll be like, I didn't break the window. That's the tenant's responsibility. Their attitude was, we don't care. Fix it or you don't get paid. So that investor is now spending $400, $500, $600 to fix a window or whatever it's going to cost him to get his rent check. So when the market crashed, investors started unloading properties. And when they got back into the market in 2012, they said, no, Section 8. I don't want to touch Section 8. It's a shit show. Don't want to do it. So sometime in the last 8 or 9 years, there's been a new director at MHA that has come in. And I don't know all the particulars, but the information I get from the people on the ground that I talk to, they're in the MHA game, is that she's done a marvelous job of rearranging how MHA handles landlords and tenants. It's no longer, you're a landlord, you suck, we don't care about you, we care only about the tenant. It's now a 50-50 deal, where they are now holding and will allow you to hold those tenants responsible for issues on a property, which has brought a lot of investors back into MHA because it's guaranteed money. They always pay over market rent. So if market's $1,250, you'll probably get $1,325 out of MHA. And on top of that, it's so complicated for tenants to move from one house to another inside MHA, they typically stay in the homes forever. They just stay. So it's really become a really good product for a tool for investors to use.
And I remember you've said before that once an MHA tenant gets the place, they do their best to hold on to that.
They do. And MHA holds, now it doesn't mean you're not going to get a bad tenant. You can get a bad self-pay tenant, you get a bad MHA tenant. I mean, you can get a bad tenant, period. But most of the MHA tenants understand that if they lose their status because they didn't maintain the property or they damaged the property or they did, you know, something in violation of the lease, they lose their MHA status forever. You never get it back. So because of that, I find a lot of these tenants really work hard to keep the house up, take care of it. They may not be clean, right? But you don't have holes punched in the walls.
As long as they're not damaging things.
Right.
I mean, it's, you know, the grass, you can always clean.
Right. The grass may not be cut every week or 10 days like it's supposed to be, but overall, they're taking decent care of the house. So in the event they vacate, yeah, you go cut the grass, throw some paint on the wall, and re-rent the place instead of going in and rebuilding it, which is what you used to have to do when a Section 8 tenant left because they just trashed it. So it's really a much better situation.
So do you have MHA tenants, Josh?
I have one, yes.
And how's that experience been?
It's been really good. And just like Brett said, like, this one takes pride and kind of, you know, I shouldn't say takes pride, but does what she needs to do to keep the place up. She actually just broke a window and volunteered to fix it.
Right.
So my experience has been really good. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, MHA tenant's biggest fear, I would think, is losing their MHA voucher.
Right.
Because let's face it,
they can't get it back.
Right. And a lot of these folks depend on that. Like, we have a lot of single moms with a couple of kids that are MHA tenants. And it doesn't mean that they're just lazy. They have a job. Some of them have two jobs. But they don't make enough money to pay the rent that is required to be in a decent neighborhood to raise your children in, right? So it's become such a valuable tool for these mothers that are single, or even, you know, husband and wife, but, you know, again, they work at FedEx and wherever, and they don't make a ton of money, and they still have to make ends meet. So it's a great tool. And smart investors have recognized that, especially in Memphis, about that need, and they've capitalized on it for their own gain. You know, I'm not going to lie, they're doing it to make money, but it's also benefiting that mother of two kids because she can be in a brand new house now with a 1-year build of warranty to raise her kids in, you know, so it's a win-win.
Win-win.
Where do you both see the real estate landscape in Memphis shifting over the course of the next year or into next year?
I do not know. I think it really depends on market conditions, you know, what's going to happen with everything going on in the country and everything else.
Yeah.
Do you have any predictions?
I think it's going to boom next year in 2026.
I think
the rates, my prediction is the rates are going to stay about where they are. If not, maybe go back up a little. And then I think they're going to drop in 2026. And I think property values are going to
Skyrocket.
That's my prediction.
I agree with that. I tend to have a little bit more of a more optimistic outlook. I believe toward the end of summer, if the current trend continues, the volume of sales in Memphis, I'm just talking about the Memphis market, not about the rest of the country, but if the level of sales that are happening today, and I'll give you an example, this week I've sold six new construction and an apartment building. Last year, I think I sold 50 homes all year. So I see an immediate influx of new investors coming into Memphis and investing in Memphis because I believe they recognize what you just said, Josh, is that is, this is about to come to an end and I want to be on the bottom of the wave when it takes off and not trying to get on top of it. So I think toward the end of summer, we're going to see, I believe, a rate drop, which will continue to spur the market into the holidays, which normally it dies off, but I think we'll see a good ramp up. And then come January, like you said, I think it's just going to be like shooting fish in a barrel. It's just going to be insane.
Yeah. Let's hope our predictions are accurate.
Yeah. I've already lost a bottle of Johnny Walker Blue on one prediction of, was it 24 I predicted? And it just went, I mean, it was just shit.
Yeah, I think we did end of 23 predictions for 24, and then back in May 24.
So far off. I just didn't realize that our current president was able to screw it up any more than it was already screwed up. But he did. Somehow he did. Somehow the market just kept getting worse. So, but, I do believe optimistic. I have a very optimistic outlook. Even last year, every day I got up saying today's going to be the day. I went 12 months saying that, and it wasn't ever the day. But now it is. So
what about actionable plays that investors can make through the remainder of this year?
Actual plays?
Yeah, I've made some notes of what I came up with.
Well, I will tell you right now would be a great opportunity. I wouldn't say right now, but let's say November, October, November, December. It would be a great time to pick up rehab projects. Get them underway. Get them finished by the first of the year. Get a tenant in place and set yourself up for that crashing wave that's going to be coming in 2026. And if your idea is to flip those properties, the best way to flip a property is to buy it, rehab it, rent it, and then put it on the market at ARV max value as a cash flowing rehab turnkey property. Because in 26, that's going to be a hot commodity when people start buying again. And you might as well set yourself up with inventory today. Or, if you can get into a property that needs minimal work, but hold it, right? It wouldn't make any sense to buy a property today and rehab it in hopes that you're going to sell it for a huge profit next month. Because while you may be able to make a profit, the big numbers are going to come in 26.
Are you recommending anything differently now as far as beds and baths? I mean, what do you suggest people buy?
3-1s minimum. Stay away from 2-1s. Unless you're in Midtown or the University of Memphis or downtown. There are certain areas of Memphis where 2-1s are very prevalent and very popular. But when you get outside in those other markets, 2-1s are very hard to sell to investors. So at least a 3-1 minimum. Don't get stuck on brick versus siding, right? Don't get stuck on slab versus conventional foundation, because none of that matters to a tenant. None of that matters. And don't look at your purchase with an emotional eyeball. Look at it as an investment, as a business, period. Don't worry about if the color of the tile is not something you would want in your house. Well, guess what? You're not living there, so it doesn't matter.
They do not care.
All right. Well, we appreciate you listening. Remember, reach out to us. You can call us at 901-692-7401 or mymemphisinvestmentproperties.com. Please go and subscribe to our podcast. We love to have you subscribe and become a part of this weekly. I'm Brett Bernard, Josh Bartz. Thanks for being here, buddy. And screw you, Richard. Have a nice day.
Screw you, Brett.
For more common sense real estate tips, listen and subscribe at 5oclocksomewherepodcast.com. The 5 O'Clock Somewhere Real Estate Investor Podcast is a Sound Ideas Group production.
Of this weekly. I'm Brett Bernard, Josh Bartz. Thanks for being here, buddy. And screw you, Richard. Have a nice day.
Screw you, Brett.
For more common sense real estate tips, listen and subscribe at 5oclocksomewherepodcast.com. The 5 O'Clock Somewhere Real Estate Investor Podcast is a Sound Ideas Group production.